One of the best things about the 21st century has been the variety of creative ways radio has evolved.
Really? That's one of the best things? It's not been the best century, then.
It's been slim. But the legacy of Marconi is in good hands with Alex Lefchik and the Midweek Drivettes. So we got that going for us.
Which is nice.
So, let us move on. We have the return of three fabulous individuals, one of whom hasn't actually returned to the Midweek Drive for quite some time, actually, and will be taming her techie monster and your techie monster as we speak. Is that person Gemma Joy? I don't know, Gemma. Do you have techie monsters that need to be tamed?
Sometimes I do, but I don't think they're to do with technology. I think they're actually to do with my own failings as a person some days. So I can't even blame it on technology. I don't think it's me.
Gemma, I've told you, just because the population of the Northeast failed to elect you as an MP for the Liberal Democrats this year, or last year indeed, just it'll go. They'll realise they made a mistake. They're already
I think you'll find I won. It's just a part of it's the vote counting. I did win. I'm winning bigly.
This is exactly the line to take. And I'm pleased you're following in that footsteps, which is great. We also welcome our ace graduate in public relations and communications, of course, Ben Lewis. Ben, welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Hi, Alex. How are you?
Splendid. And are you in? Have you left London now? Or are you back there?
I'm in Lincoln at the moment. I've been a bit back and forth over the last month or two with events and whatnot, which have been still going on, actually, funny enough. But it's nice to be back in Lincoln, actually. Breath of fresh
events,
air,
obviously. Events obviously do continue, just as face-to-face teaching or face-to-visor teaching continues, because, you know, lockdown. What lockdown is this? It's most peculiar.
Of course.
Never mind. Presumably, do you tame a techie monster, Ben?
Not really. I mean, I think I've just adapted a lot of it over the course of lockdown. I mean, I think I've got every application possible now on my laptop to have a meeting. But besides that, I mean, I think just technology generally, I feel like it's got worse in terms of quality. Everything, I feel like a bit of a skeptic when it comes to everything. Everything's made to break. So it's the kind of the thing I'm having at the moment with my laptop, battery wise anyway, at least.
Oh dear.
So I'm just living my life through a charger.
Built-in obsolescence. Yeah. Well, by a process of elimination then, it can only be the ace life coach and general all-around fine soul, the co-creator of Healthy Alternative Fares back in the early part of the 21st century. Whoa. It's Sheila Jones. Welcome, Sheila. How are you?
I'm great. It's lovely to be back with you, Alex.
Well, there we are. So then you must be taming your techie monster, from screaming at your computer to clients lining up for what you do. It seems so simple. Millions of people out there, you just need to find your few. It's been a while since you started to try and market your business online. And then it goes on from there. Talk to us about taming your techie monster, Sheila.
Yeah, I mean, I work with all the lovely sort of people that I met at the Healthy Alternative Fair, the lovely people who have wonderful things that they can do with people. They are able to help them to deal with all sorts of problems in their life. And they just can't get the people in touch with those people, or they're not getting in touch with those people. And these lovely, I call them fluffy people, they just find technology just passes them by. For them, if they can cut and paste, they are technical whizzes. And that's about the sum of what they can do. And they don't want to engage. But these days, it's not easy to do it any other way. There are other ways. And I end up sometimes with people and say, actually, do you know, just leave the tech stuff alone and we'll find other ways for you to do it. But the truth is that for some people, the techie monster is actually what they're hiding behind. They actually don't really want to get out there, so they hide behind the techie monster. So when I clear away the techie monster and show them the way that they can get themselves out there, then they have to face the fact, oh, actually, maybe I don't really want to. And then we go through that, and then eventually off they go. They've got something that they can do, and happy days.
It's like opening up a whole new world, really. I mean, it's amazing. Fluffy stuff and so on. So presumably you meet many people who believe that Zoom was an ice lolly in the 1960s and not a way of actually running radio shows.
That's very true. That's very true. Okay. I wish I was like my colleague and bought shares in Zoom about a year ago.
Well, let's move on from there. Ben, we'll turn to you. Have you got any questions you'd like to put to Sheila about life, the universe, and indeed the business that you're in, which is, of course, PR, event management, and so on? He's muted himself, you see. He's muted himself, and he doesn't realise it's a technical
it's
problem.
It's hit me on the bum. It really has. I was going to say, so Sheila, how do you find tech is changing things sort of going forward now that, obviously, with the hope that the vaccine is found and COVID eventually dies away, or whether it will die away. How do you find technology now has a place in certainly people who never perhaps encountered it before COVID? And certainly I know a lot of the older generation used FaceTime and whatnot to interact with their families. Do you think there's a bit more of a transition for companies to appeal to those sorts of audiences now that they're different and older backgrounds are becoming more used to technology?
Yeah, I mean, I have an aunt who is 86 and she's learned how to use her iPad and to use Zoom to connect into family calls. It's taken a little bit of encouragement and patience, but she's got there. It's opened up a completely new life to her. So, yeah, I don't think that age or anything like that is a problem. I also think that technology actually has got an awful lot easier. Alex, you'll remember the days years and years and years ago where if you wanted to put up a website, you were in the hands of a website designer. And if you wanted to change a word, you had to go to that website designer and get them to do it for you. And it cost you an arm and a leg.
Wait as well, actually. It usually have
a long wait.
Exactly. Weeks before you could change things.
Exactly. But now you can get the buzz phrases, an MVP, the minimum viable product. You can start up something and you can find something that'll take you there, a tool of some sort that'll allow you to test out an idea, see if it'll work, and then you can scale it. That's the thing that technology now does to me. The price of entry, the cost to entry is so low. You can find something that you can do really easily, probably free, and then you can develop it. So I think that's a big change. And I think people are suddenly finding that actually they can do things that just weren't available in the past. And what's also fascinating is the number of people who've had businesses that have been very live, they have managed to find ways that they can do it online. And it's incredible what people are doing. People are running classes on how to knit. They're running work a lot, do this along with me, those sort of sessions. People are doing those and people are doing things along with a teacher that in the past they would have had to have gone out to the local hall and do it with them in person. And actually they quite like doing it at home because you only have to sign on 2 minutes before the class starts and 2 minutes after you're done. You don't have to get there and get cold and all of those sort of things. I think where we're missing out is is actually sort of touchy-feely stuff. I haven't been near a member of family to have a cuddle since March, and I'm not alone in that, you know. So I think that's where we're missing out. But lots of things are happening that are just completely new, so I think it's exciting.
Well, I do believe that there are tactile sensor suits that are in development, so you actually can work through that, because clearly, you know, you don't want to go all the way from that perspective. It's just a thought there. And as indeed Ben and Gemma are well aware, I always have Spike here to obviously keep us appraised of life, the universe, and various other bits and bobs. Gemma, you've been listening to that little interchange. How are you coping in the joys of deepest Redcar and, of course, Cleveland?
Yeah, it's been up and down, and I think like Sheila says, you find your own way to navigate through things and try to fill the gaps. So there are some gaps that I've noticed that, you know, there's a whole host of people that I would like to connect with who don't have email, so therefore they don't have Zoom and they are missing out and it's really difficult to get to them. And I think like Sheila says that, you know, if only they could be enticed in with some sort of hook. And I think everyone has a hook. So for example, my dad, when the internet first came out, for the last 20 or 30 years, he's been insisting that the internet is for, and I quote, nerds and pervs. And it was only in the last last sort of 5 to 10 years, when when the internet changed from being sort of a useful tool to look at stuff to, you know, the way we all live our lives, and he found that he had to approach people to book a hotel or to book a train ticket, for example, that then he started to think, oh, there might be something that I need to upskill here. And it was when I showed him old clips of the Rolling Stones on YouTube, it suddenly piqued his interest, and then he wanted YouTube on his telly. So I think you have to tap into the hook that is going to work for that person to bring them in. But it's something that I'm struggling to get a few people involved with. I'm fine, I'm all over it, but it's a little bit like saturation. There's an internet saturation and there's online saturation. And this week I've tried to get out and see trees because it's all getting a bit much.
I know it's shocking, Ben, but we do have trees in the northeast as well, just from a southern point, but, you know.
I'm in Lincolnshire, I'll just remind you. I mean, I suppose it's mostly flat land over here, but I was in Peak District actually last week, so I did see many trees. Don't you worry.
Do you find with your clients, with respect to obviously the motor industry, that they're all tech savvy, that they're on the case, etc., or like Gemma and Sheila have actually said, it's that kind of need to get somebody to entice them in to actually give them a COVID dividend?
You have a bit of a balance, I think, really, because we work with some OEMs that, you know, big car brands, unfortunately I can't name them on here, but, you know, big car brands that will have their own systems and their own software that they religiously stick by. But then you'll have some, you know, independent firms, quite, you know, a lot lower income firms that we deal with as well, who are very traditional, who don't want to do that. They want to have meetings in person. They want to come into London to have meetings, and not at the moment, but that's what they wanted beforehand, and they've had to adapt. And unfortunately, they've not had the choice but to adapt. And the closest you can really get to them otherwise is a phone call. But I think for different people, it's different things. Some people like having the convenience of being at home and having their laptop and doing everything through that. But some people do like that personal interaction. I think to an extent, we all like that personal interaction because we all want to, you know, read each other's emotions, talk to each other and understand what we're doing, and have that feel like having that time dedicated to us rather than someone having Zoom open and then having another tab open whilst they're doing that meeting. And I think there is an element of that. So I think it'll be interesting to see how it is going forward. I suspect many businesses will adapt, and not only will people be working from home more often, but I think there'll be a case of there's less meetings taking place in person. A lot of it will end up being a Zoom call because, you know, why do you need to fly over from Germany to do a meeting and spend a whole day doing anything out of the office when you could spend, you know, that half an hour call on Zoom from the office and then being more productive at work, I guess.
And, of course, reducing your carbon footprint as well. Let's face it, the climate crisis is not going away.
Exactly.
Sheila, I mean, these are all positives from the side of things. Do you think that's something we need to look towards in a world in which we currently obviously have Joe Biden preparing to take over from Donald Trump, unless, of course, other things sort of emerge that we're heading for that way? And Britain actually, well, I mean, I'm suggesting maybe Bojo should actually go and join Donald on some sort of island and they could just spend the rest of their days comparing hairstyles. You know, I mean, he needs some friends as well. He's probably not getting hugs either.
Maybe they should go on a retreat.
yeah. Well, they've certainly put and they've put most countries into retreat. Certainly, Britain and the USA have been in retreat for quite some time. So why not actually sort of lead from behind, which is great. Anyway, Sheila, any thoughts of yourself?
Which bit? You lost me there.
Don't know. I mean, let's talk about the benefits in terms of the climate and indeed of working through that. That actually, what we're doing now, which is something which would have not. We were sort of doable via Skype, etc., but we went to a radio studio. We actually connected via phone lines. We did various other bits and pieces. Now, as I say, we managed to link up East Yorkshire with Lincolnshire, with Teesside, with Cleveland, you know, and, you know, it just means a bit of time. We can coordinate that. It's magical.
Yeah, this is all good. The thing that I think there is a little bit of, and this is sort of goes into my law of attraction stuff, is be careful what you ask for. Because I know this is what we've wanted. We've wanted to cut our carbon footprint. We've wanted to reduce greenhouse gases through travel. But, and I'm sure that side of it, you know, you can see pictures of where, you know, traffic fog has fallen and there's clear skies and all the rest of it. But the personal cost is horrendous. the personal cost, the financial cost to an awful lot of people, and particularly ones who are hidden. You're talking about them, Gemma, the people who aren't connected. That's my worry. My daughter lost her business. She's a wedding planner in Spain, and it just went. She has relocated over here, and she's working in Gloucester, counselling with kids, because she's, if you're a wedding planner, you're a counsellor. So she's cross. But she's also a trained counsellor. She is working with kids who have been terrified by this whole thing, who have been so brainwashed by don't go out because it's dangerous, who now can't go out, who don't want to go back to school, who are scared stiff of going back to school, who are scared of being in contact with people. And she's working with them. She's also working with people, with kids who are who have had to stay at home in abusive situations because they couldn't go to school, and their release was to go to school and to go to the clubs and to go to, and they haven't been able to, and they've been corralled. There's a whole underworld. So yeah, from the climate point of view, I absolutely get that it's done some real good, but I think there's an undercurrent that is really quite terrifying that I'm seeing through her eyes. Of people who are just being missed. And I'm self-employed. I'm lucky. My work has continued, but there's loads of self-employed who, for various reasons, are just superbly struggling, just horrendously struggling. So, yeah, I think we've learned that we don't need to do as much of it. And I would not like to say how many airlines we'll have at the beginning of 2022. I think there'll be a lot fewer.
But it's Her Majesty's platinum year. I mean, you know, surely we'll be expecting lots of tourists to flood into the country to actually sort of celebrate the extra bank holiday that we're just being given.
That's true. And who pays for that? Shall I? All the employers are thinking, yeah, okay, who's going to pay for the 2 day extra days bank holidays I've got to give? Yeah.
Yeah, bottom line, Sheila, you know, eat act to celebrate Her Majesty. That's the line that Rishi Sunak will take. Eat act to celebrate. That's the whole thing, to save scenarios. Gemma, you have a couple of young children, obviously a family. I mean, what Sheila's been saying from that point of view, I mean, it does reveal a whole range of the views that's actually there. And yeah, whichever way you look at it, that certainly governments across the globe have actually done an excellent job in terms of terrorizing us. I mean, in many ways, we have been... We've worked through this process. I mean, I must admit, back in the day, back in March, those halcyon moments, we thought, that's it, it's all over. It's just time to make the peace with your maker and effectively just end it now, really. But, you know, we've gradually worked through this. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, are you intrinsically optimistic? Are we reaching for the positive side? Or is it a case of, you know, maybe not?
I think you always have to reach for the positive side, but sometimes it's really, really hard to do, and there is an overload of bad news and what's the polite way of saying it? Meddling and muddles and muddle ups. That's a nice word, isn't it? Muddle up.
That would have been so much better if you'd called your podcast that, basically.
Yes.
Meddles and muddles, that's actually. Yeah. As opposed to the council.
Well, what Sheila said, I think it highlights the point that, you know, COVID has done is exposed things that were in the cracks that were already there that we either hadn't noticed before, but we had noticed them. We just pushed them away from the agenda. So they've now risen up to the fore. So, you know, children who are at risk are now in the place where they are most at risk. So that's not at school. That's one of the things, you know, we've got people looking after sort of, you know, carers at home who are unpaid, who are basically propping up the UK because they're unpaid carers. So we've got all these pockets of people who are now being noticed, and that's, in a way, that's a good thing. And I hope that that doesn't go away once we get this, you know, if we get this silver bullet of a vaccine and eventually things do go back to normal. Although I don't think they ever will go back to normal. And I think that the climate has been a real winner from this, and hopefully that awareness of it, although unfortunately at the moment the looming pandemic and people's health, which is really, really important, I totally buy into that concept of, you know, it's a public health outbreak for a reason, because it involves us all, not just pockets of the people who are at risk. But I think that there is something about the climate change, and hopefully we won't forget that or sort of wait till the pandemic goes away to address climate change. Because, you know, if we think that the pandemic's bad, wow, the impacts of climate change are going to make it look like a, you know, picnic with a teddy bear.
So. Yeah, maybe this is the kind of the overture. Maybe this is just the kind of the opening act, etc. Just a thought there. Maybe not. Then your thoughts for somebody who's involved in the car industry is a case of, well, we're going all electric now. We don't care.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously there's legislation in place for that, for car brands to go electric. I think it's by 2050, if I'm not mistaken.
But the targets are 2030, you know.
Yeah, well, of course. But, you know, actually, I think it's doing all right so far. I think the progress is going very well. A lot of car brands are switching to a full EV lineups. Bentley announced it the other day that by 2025, I believe it is, they're going to have an all new model range where it'll all be electric vehicle based. So I think it's very positive. The only thing I think that needs to come on more so is the charging infrastructure in the UK, because there's just not enough of it. And the stuff that there is there is costing quite a lot of money, and not just for the people to make it, but also for people to charge their vehicles. Now with some suppliers like Tesla, you can have, subsidized cost because you're all subscribed to this whole network. But certain car companies, it's just not doable for some people. And some people, you know, the nearest charging point is miles and miles away, especially if you live in the countryside. So I think there's got to be realistic about, certain other aspects of it that will help the process. But really, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see how that develops in time. I think the biggest thing with COVID-19, though, that I've noticed is social issues. As Gemma touched upon there. And I think one thing that we're particularly, although the younger generation is one of the biggest points when it comes to social issues, but I think the older generation as well, particularly as we're going into winter, when it comes to loneliness, Christmas, that sort of thing. And a lot of them are quite isolated. I mean, my grandfather's in a care home at the moment. And even those guys, they're all having to isolate in their own rooms. It's not a case of mixing everyone in the same, you know, communal areas. That's just not how it works. So I think elements of that will also, you know, struggle too. And I think there will be some consequences that will go on for some time after this, even if it does eventually end up, you know, finishing, I guess. But I think there'll be different aspects of it suffering for quite a while.
Gemma, one of the things that has been commented on by a lot of journalists in various ways for various papers has been that when a government has actually got this level of control, they're pretty reluctant to actually give it up. I mean, traditionally, you know, rationing was in place after the Second World War until 1953. There are lots of sort of examples where you just think, let's just leave it on because it's a lovely way of actually controlling folk. You're the one who's probably been closest in recent years, at least, to obviously that political thing. You're still campaigning to actually ensure proportional representation is sorted through from that. Are you concerned that whoever actually sort of takes over from 10 Downing Street might say, my word, this is a heck of a good opportunity to actually start controlling people?
So if you're asking me about sort of... If you think about the political ideology of the main two parties, obviously they're, you know, you're talking right and left, so you've got completely opposite there. But actually, they're both authoritarian parties. And yeah, when you have a hold over people, either with a massive 80-seat majority, or whether you have that hold because you have an electoral system that can only realistically elect two big parties, and then the other four or five, you know, sometimes more if you get independents, are out, then it's a golden opportunity. And some days I wake up and I think, yeah, let's campaign for proportional representation. It will change everything. And we have a landscape where people can vote for who they want to win, not who they don't want to win, but, you know, less worst. And some days I think, well, of course it's not going to change because, you know, the two big parties don't want to change. Why would you? Why would you? You would be foolish to. So, those are my bad days. And then they have to look to the future and be positive. Otherwise, there's no point being an activist and a campaigner, is there?
This is so true. And do remember, of course, that Gemma does actually celebrate her birthday 2 days after Prince Charles celebrates his. You know, there's Prince Charles on the 14th of November, Gemma on the 16th. It's neatly put together. It's great. Sheila, you've listened to the thoughts of Gemma, and listened to Ben and so on. You got any questions you want to put to them as the sort of next set of generations that are working through? I mean, are you encouraged? Are you enthused? As a case of, gosh, I missed those healthy alternative fairs. We're not going to have them now. I still actually go through the area because every Saturday, usually I'll try to check out the studio wearing masks and so on, and thinking, how crazy we were in those days with all of those exhibitors in that space, in that hospital. Unbelievable. Yeah, anyway, Sheila, over to you.
I know, it was lovely. Well, there was just one thing, that the irony of Ben talking about electric cars, which actually I really have a lot of concerns about. I live in the country, and I, you know, and you can't charge up your computer is not lost on me. You're struggling to keep your computer charged up, and yet you want me to have a car that is going to be charged.
Of course, that's one of the biggest troubles. And that's what I mean. I think the infrastructure just needs to be highlighted. Yeah. I mean, we used to work quite closely with a charging firm, and we've rolled out quite a lot of chargers. But to be honest, it's never enough. You can never not have enough. I mean, it's equivalent at the moment. Well, the way the infrastructure works is, you've got to have tons of different apps for different charges. It's like having a different payment card for every time you go to a new petrol station. It's just not realistic. And there needs to be ways to work around it. Some of them are contactless, then some of them you've got to have a monthly subscription to. And if you've not driven electric cars before, it's hard to get your head around it. It really is. Mm. It took me quite a while as well. And I think the trouble is there's just not that system in place, I don't think, at the moment. And you know, something will have to change. I suspect that it will end up requiring a lot of government help. And I don't think the car industry is getting a lot of it at the moment, because the way that government and car industry is working is the government's telling the car industry, you've got to change this, but there's no offer of a solution. It's fine. Here's the problem. You guys need to solve it. I don't think there's much help really from the Department for Transport in that respect, at least.
But the good news, I suppose, Ben, is that clearly we can look forward to lots of assistance from our friends and allies in Europe and America. Oh, perhaps not. I don't know. Just a thought there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sheila, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say something to Gemma, if I've got a moment, yeah? Because, Gemma, your point about proportional representation, I think if ever there was a situation that showed just how that would work, it was the vote on Brexit. Because in that vote, for the first time, everybody's vote counted. And that's why we got the result that nobody expected, because everybody expected people to vote in the in big clumps, and that areas would all vote the same. They didn't. Everybody voted individually and everybody's vote counted. And I think that was the biggest proof that we need proportional representation.
And interestingly, why we're still banging on about it is because we're all emotionally invested either way in making that decision, and the only people who aren't you know, the other 50% of the UK who didn't, either couldn't vote or didn't vote. So actually people say, oh, it's, you know, 50% voted this and 50 that. Actually it wasn't, it was, you know, it was smaller than that. But that's probably why we're emotionally hooked into it, because we genuinely wanted to make a change rather than filling your name out or
Yeah, well, at least we can look forward to Scotland and Wales going their own way, Northern Ireland, and then we'll be left with, I think, a little bit of Britain. Yorkshire will declare independence, obviously. That's the next line further forward.
Please do not talk about Northern Ireland, Alex, because I have my a lot of family there, and I am so worried about how it's going to be for them, because stuff going over to Northern Ireland is going to be a nightmare unless somebody somewhere says, we have to find a way around it. And at the moment, there is no way around it. At the moment, it is just, please God, something will happen. But at the moment,
I'm sure it will, Sheila, because that's the positivity. Don't forget, you can go to SheilaJones.com to find out about taming your techie monster. I think, Gemma, actually, I'm going to award you a senior co-presenter status here, because actually we started doing these shows long before actually Ben came on the scene, and even before Sheila actually came on the scene from that point of view. So it forced yourself, Gemma, to put those last two questions to the team. Over you go, my girl.
Well, Ben and Sheila, it's been an absolute pleasure, but I have to ask you both, and you must require an honest answer. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat?
It's been lovely, thank you.
And will you join us? Good, and will you join us again?
It would be nice to, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. Superb. Technically, of course, it's a Zoomer as opposed to telephonic chat, but there we are. That's by the by. I mean, other than that, it's flawless, Gemma. You know, absolutely
retro.
As we knew it would be. Sheila Jones, Gemma Joy, and Ben Lewis, huge thanks. Take care, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon. And who knows what magic will manifest between now and then.
Who knows?
Thanks, Alex.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
£434 million. £434 million. Is that to do with respect to our indebtedness and a whole variety of other things? Well, it's certainly to do with debt. It's all to do with housemates. And unlike the wonderful world of Friends and that time where people can live together and happily get on, it would seem that nightmare housemates are indeed costing Brit folk who actually share flats with them £434 million each year. That's £552 per person. Now, to actually talk through some of the findings in this recent survey, we're delighted to welcome a genuine money expert extraordinaire, and indeed an independent relationship expert and coach, more importantly. It's the fabulous Joe Barnett. How are you, Joe?
Good afternoon. Very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I mean, I don't actually have any flatmates at present. In a sense, I'm pleased I don't really. So, I mean, it's good news from that point of view. But this is quite shocking, really, in terms of flatmates who basically just don't pay their way.
Yeah, it's a lot of money, you know, and it's a lot of people's hard-earned money that they really these days can't afford to just give away. So I think it's really worth changing things around and finding a way forward that you're not losing money by sharing a flat with somebody. And, you know, that's why Barclays Money Mentors have come up with this brilliant guidance where you can get this guidance for free and just help with all of the budgeting, even if you're planning for your financial future, so that you have an alternative to just kind of winging it.
I mean, more than half of those surveyed lived in shared accommodation, and they say they become financially worse off as a result of an unreliable flatmate. I'm thinking, Joe, in terms of the reasons for this, I mean, is it because when somebody's actually living with you, you feel almost as though emotionally, even though there's no kind of blood relationship there, there's a kind of connection that you don't want to kind of be seen as the person saying, oi, you need to actually pay your way, etc. And maybe we actually put off things. Is it just a case of we kind of defer to our natural kind of kind settings here?
Well, that's right. You know, no one wants to have to talk about money. People find it quite awkward, but actually it's the reverse. The more you talk about it, the more simple things will be. So, you know, I've suggested a few tips, like when you move in together, actually have a kitty, so that you might take your cleaning products from there, or your basics, your milk and your tea bags, things like that, and that the kitty is then replaced. So talk about these things, communicate. Don't leave things to chance, and don't wait until there's a big upset. You know, have these things laid out in writing, in house rules, as soon as you guys move in together.
I was going to say, would you suggest actually getting a kind of contract drawn up together, which effectively all parties sign, and they actually say, look, this needs to be the case. Then, of course, I suppose you've got the issue about people breaking the contract and going through that line, but at least it might help.
Well, that's right. And at least you can hold people accountable. So the other thing I've suggested is having a WhatsApp group. So, you know, if someone's used all the milk in the fridge, you could send a little polite note saying, hey, guys, you know, someone's finished off the milk. Could you just please replace it so I can have my tea in the morning? You know, it doesn't need to be a horrible tone. It can be a friendly tone. But things like the WhatsApp, communal WhatsApp group, and the list of house rules that are on the fridge and you've all agreed to it before you move in together will just keep that communication open.
Siren Ray, you're obviously based at the University of Lincoln, and clearly our students, like all universities, they're kind of involved with a whole variety of things. And I must admit, as a tutor, I have heard my fair share from, indeed, students about the challenges they've had about cohabitants not cleaning up after themselves, basically taking food without replacing it, inviting friends over without asking. I mean, this does seem to be quite a systemic problem that we've actually got. I mean, is it a generational thing? I mean, the more mature people get as flatmates, you know, as you into your 20s and 30s, I mean, maybe you've stopped sort of being a flatmate in that sort of stage. Is that less of a problem, or is it a case of
no? I think these days, you know, you can find flatmates in 30s, 40s, because there's people that can't afford to get on the property ladder yet. So yes, of course, as you get older, you get more mature, but you also get more set in your ways. So, you know, ironing things out and being able to talk about money and how you're going to divide up bills and a kitty, and when money's due, it's never too early to have that conversation.
And presumably you want to actually avoid pressing the metaphorical red button and actually going nuclear over your flatmate actually not paying their bills on time. I mean, these are strategies that, in a sense, you need to put into place to ensure they're preventative rather than actually having to deal with the cure.
Well, that's right. You know, it may seem like more time effective, but it'd be really great if you've got this WhatsApp group and someone could send a polite reminder the week coming up to when the money's due, or, you know, rent's due, bills need to be paid. Hey, guys, can you please put into the account, you know, bills are being taken out in a few days time. Thanks so much. So everyone's had a reminder. And if there's any problems, ask what's going on. And, you know, you could even refer your flatmate to the Barclays Money Mentors scheme. And if they need some extra help or mentoring, it's there.
And it's important to actually note that obviously we provide impartial financial advice, because clearly there might be a sort of thought that, I don't bank with Barclays, I have my accounts elsewhere. You can't really use that as an excuse, because you can get this impartial advice as well, presumably.
That's right. It's a free guidance and it's available to anyone. You don't have to bank with Barclays. So it's fantastic news for, anyone who wants to get in contact with them. It's absolutely available. No excuse.
Have you ever had any experience of this, Jo? I mean, I suspect with your negotiating skills, you probably actually just sort it out immediately. But has there been any time when you've actually had a flatmate who you just thought, oh, no, this is just not going well?
I do remember at university having flatmates, and, you know, there were issues over cleanliness. You know, no one was cleaning the kitchen or the bathroom, and it was just revolting. And even I felt, well, I don't want to do it the whole time. It's so revolting. So, you know, that's why I've suggested having a rota, you know, drawn up. And even if you can afford it, get a cleaner once a month to come in. Food, you know, other people using your food, and just having the fridge not clean enough that you would even want to leave your food there. So you've just got to iron these things out at the beginning and say, like, come on, guys, this is how we want to live. Let's not let it go. Let's work together as a team. And if someone's struggling, then recognize they're struggling. And instead of sort of being quite cool and critical, maybe asking what's going on, you know, you're having some issues. Is there anything that you want to talk to us about? And having that human side to you.
And a reminder, Jo, where can people actually check out this Barclays Money Mentors? What's the best website to go to for further information?
So the best place to go to is barclays.co.uk/moneymentors. And you'll be able to get guidance on how to achieve your financial goals.
Jo Barnett, relationship expert and coach. Huge thanks indeed. Keep on keeping on. And I'm sure we'll speak again soon. Bye for now, Jo.
Thank you.